This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
We're talking about how to make sex, open sexuality, free sexuality, less stigmatized, especially with, you know, religions saying that some sex is good and some sex has to be espoused in, you know, certain ways like marriage. But how do we have healthy, open sexuality? You know, how do we create sex positive messages? You know, some sex is good and healthy. And, you know, how do we have more of that? We'll be talking to a couple of different experts and looking into a couple of different really fun ideas. First, we have a very special guest from Amsterdam, Rukama Vanderhorn. She is doing her master's thesis in anthropology. It's ethnographic research looking into how to counter sex negative stigma and how to kind of normalize sexual freedom, actually looking at the alternative porn community in San Francisco. Rukama, welcome to Sexploration with Monica.
Thank you.
Yeah. Also, we have some people who make porn films in the San Francisco Bay Area. In just a few moments, we'll talk to Arabelle Raphael. She has worked with Evil Angel Productions, a fabulous film called Occupy My Ass, some social justice connotations there. Also, Asphyxia Heals the World, H-E-E-L-S, heals, you know, for foot fetishes. Healing the world, always good. So we'll talk to her in just a moment. She also works with SWAP, the Sex Worker Outreach Project. You know, they do a bunch of legislation, outreach, protests. We also have Alice of Alice in Bondage Land.
Who,
yes. And she does Alice in Sissy Land for latex and sissy fetish. Mm-hmm. And her goal is to empower women to create the kind of videos they want to be in and enjoy watching.
Exactly. There needs to be more porn that looks like so much fun that people at home just have to try it.
Right. They're not just watching. It's kind of a participatory thing. I mean, you've got the mirror neurons going there and they're like, oh, that looks like fun.
Exactly. That's the goal, is to make it look as much fun as possible.
And our token straight guy is Malcolm Grissom from The Verve Show.
That's me.
Welcome back to Sexploration with Monica.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I think it's going to be a really fun show. Some exciting good news, however. You know how oftentimes there's church groups that are holding up signs at like gay pride parades and all sorts of things, and it makes you want to not be a human being anymore? Some good news. A church group in Chicago brought signs to a gay pride parade saying, I'm sorry for how the church treated you. We're sorry for the Bible thumping, homophobia. And seriously, the pictures are just so endearing. There's like men in face paint and tiny little tighty whities that are like hugging the church people with their signs. And everyone's smiling and crying at the same time. It totally made me tear up.
Wow. Where was this?
In Chicago, at the Gay Pride Parade, a church brought signs that actually said, I'm sorry for how the church has been treating you. You know, we accept you. We're trying to create dialogue. We're at the Gay Pride Parade and support you.
I'm proud of them.
Isn't that wonderful? It just makes you like proud to be a human being. You're like, yay, we're getting it right. People are smiling and hugging each other. It actually is really to see the guy in the underwear hugging the church people. It's really heartwarming. So, yeah, it's really good. So, Rukama. You came to San Francisco. You're doing this project about porn, sex positivity, and countering sex negativity and helping, you know, defray some of the stigma that we have about sex in our culture. Why did you choose San Francisco?
Well, I love San Francisco.
Easy to do.
Yes. I used to live here. I've lived here a few years ago for about 3 years. I moved back to Amsterdam, and when my university told me I should go somewhere abroad to do field work, I picked San Francisco, and
right.
I'm really, really happy to be back. I love it here.
But why does it make sense that you would come to the United States or San Francisco to look at culture and stigma and fighting against sex negativity?
Because in Amsterdam and the Netherlands, there has been a long history of sex positivity.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a word?
Sex work.
Yeah, that is a word.
Okay. And sex work is legal there. You
sex
can
work
be
is legal. Yeah.
They have a red light district, and they have the windows in which the ladies or men sex workers stand, and
yes.
they advertise their services, and you get a shower before you, and it's very clear you can negotiate.
Yes, that's true.
And it's regulated.
It's regulated. Women and men at work there, they pay taxes. They are secure. They're protected by the law and by the police. So that's all very good. And therefore, there hasn't been not a lot of activism, not a lot of sex worker activism in the Netherlands lately, because there was no need for it.
Right.
But nowadays, with more and more stories in the newspaper about human trafficking, there has become this kind of hysteria mm-hmm. about sex work. And there's a new conservatism going on in the Netherlands.
Right.
So there's debates going on to criminalize it again. And so I think, because I work with sex workers, so I see what they experience, and they tell me it's getting harder and harder. So I think there's a need for activism in the Netherlands to use the public platforms to inform the general public about what sex work is. And I decided I would want to come here to see how sex workers here are active to destigmatize their trade.
Right. And because it's illegal here, we really have to work harder to destigmatize sex work and
yes.
prostitution, you know, everything.
Yes. Because as long as it's fine and legal in a country, then there's no need for activism. So that's, you can see that with a lot of social topics. And in this case, it's sex work. And I think Holland can actually learn a lot from the activism that is going on here.
Mm. So how do you think that the way that our culture is oppressing sexual freedom, how do you think that that affects sex worker activism?
I think that makes sex worker activism a lot more needed, a lot more visible, and a lot more passionate, I think, because it's such a human need to be free about your sexuality. And as when you get oppressed by the government or laws because of that, then I think it's just this inner power that you want to mm-hmm. express, because you want to be free to do what you want. Mm-hmm. To be the sexual being that you are. So it's very big and passionate here mm-hmm. compared to Holland, because in Holland it's just normal. Sex work is just totally normal, so there's not a big
right.
So
here people really have to work hard and like really go after their dream if they want to be a sex worker, and they have to really fight against all sorts of stigma, or yeah. maybe more.
Yes, they do. Right. They do so.
Although it seems like it would be somewhat stigmatized even in Amsterdam. And I know that there has been some discussion about trafficking, and then a lot of the red light districts are diminishing and getting shut down. Is that true?
Or yeah, it's true, because there's trafficking going on, mm-hmm. although it's to be discussed whether or not that's... first of all, I don't think that should be... Oh God! It's a
little
difficult
to criminalize.
It's right. It should not make the whole trade of sex work criminalized, because mm-hmm. there's other things going on, and it's more complicated. So therefore, I think that's one thing. And on the other side, yes, the sex workers in Amsterdam and in the other cities where there are red light districts, which basically is every city in the Netherlands has a red light district. The women there, they feel that it's getting more and more difficult to work there because of stigma, and there's more control by the police, and it's more scrutinized, and it's getting more and more difficult to work as an independent hooker.
Right. I wonder how, I mean, they should be able to make a distinction between trafficking, like trafficking should be illegal, right?
Yeah.
And then sex work can still be legal, and
yeah.
then they can still regulate it, and then you still have safety if you're, you know, abused or something. If you get, you know, if someone hurts you as a sex worker, you can still come forward and say, you know, I need help, and you can still get help from the police.
Yeah. And that, I think, is the best. That's what we always used to have in the Netherlands. That's why I think that our organizations against trafficking and to support sex workers were always so good, because they combined the two.
Right.
Like the organization that I work for, I'm a social worker. I'm totally working to support sex workers, help them with anything they need or want, whatever, without having the need to tell them to leave their trade, because they don't have
right.
to. And that would make it a lot easier for me to gain their trust mm-hmm. and to have them come forward whenever there's a problem, or they know anyone who may be forced into their work. So that I think, was a really good way that Holland used to work. And now they're changing it. And I think it is more, it has to do with immigration. Immigration is becoming more and more a problem in the Netherlands, according to some politicians. And therefore, sex work and trafficking is really good way to get more and more people behind you. It seems like a political game. And the
Oh, because they can use the emotional power of sex work and trafficking, and these women are, and then everyone's like, oh, it's so awful, and then, you know, gain a lot of notoriety and power, basically using the drama of sex work as a tool for notoriety.
That is it. That's exactly it. And they're actually using the idea of the vulnerable woman, exotic other.
Like everyone's
also
a victim.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and that helps because people who don't really know what is going on, they quickly believe that, yeah, indeed, that is a problem because everybody's against slavery. So there you go.
And how could a woman do this voluntarily? I think a lot of people just think, oh, well, sex workers must be damaged because I wouldn't do that. But, you know, people make different choices.
Yeah. And that was a discussion in the 70s already. So for a long time, that was never a problem anymore in the Netherlands because people agreed that it's a perfectly normal choice for a career if that's what you wanted. But it's like things are changing at this time.
Interesting. Yeah. It's sort of alarming and kind of, it's horrifying that it could slip backwards. You know what I mean? That you could have all of this progress and safety and, you know, acceptance and like have politicians or what do you think is making the change go backwards?
That happens more often in history. It's like things go in circles. It's not always progress because apparently in the early 1900s, there was also a new hysteria of human trafficking. Well, before that, sex work was also okay in a lot of places. So it's like history is repeating itself and it's always a response to what happened before. So we're in the 70s and before that and in the last decades, sex work has been cheered on and be totally fine in the Netherlands. It seems like the next generation, this generation, wants to turn that back for whatever reason. Like it seems like generations always want to do something different than the previous generation. So want to change what's going on.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that kind of explains the back and forth. You know, it goes conservative and then it's liberal and then it goes back to conservative because there's always that polarity. You know, when there's one thing in power, then you can fight against that thing in power and then it swings back, kind of the pendulum going back and forth between the two. Although I hope that we move forward and I hope that we learn things and I hope that we're like, you know, people are people and we should treat them like people.
Yes.
Even if they're sex workers, even if they're women, even if they're, you know, from a foreign country and don't have a lot of money. I think, you know.
I think so too. And I think I've always been really proud to be Dutch and that we are so tolerant and we have such incredible laws and acceptance and support for sex workers. But now I'm beginning to be a little bit more embarrassed about my government. And therefore I decided instead of always pointing at America like, oh, haha, how are you doing it here? But now I see San Francisco has some incredible things going on with the activism. So actually I'm here to learn from you.
Oh, that's exciting. Oh, that's very encouraging. Yeah, it's a wonderful sex positive community here. What are some of the groups that you've been meeting? I mean, I know I introduced you to Kinky Salon, the sex positive.
That was really interesting.
Aren't they fun?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really interesting and fun. Yeah, that's the first thing that comes to mind. It was fun and very lovable. Those people are so nice.
They're all about connection and community and creating things, you know, dreams, making them real, you know.
Yeah, and acceptance and consent and boundaries. I thought there's so much, it seemed that in a place like Kinky Salons or the sex positive community where for other people it may sound like, oh, they just do it with whomever, whatever, everything is possible.
As if it was,
It seems that they're much more conscious of their choices. And it's all communicated and it seems like it's a very safe place to go and a safe group of people that respect each other.
Right. Well, it definitely is about rules. I mean, they certainly have a few rules. You know, you have to bring a friend with you because they want you to have the support of some, you know, you want support and also that you're accountable to someone that you actually know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that person is going to make sure that you don't get too drunk, whatever. And then you leave when that person leaves. So it's not like a couple can come together and then one of them gets mad. And then the other one's like, oh, I'm going to stay at the party and you go ahead and leave. And, you know, it's kind of that, you know, that's how you could break up a marriage, you know? Yeah. So they're really accountable both to the connections that are being made between people and also to people's sense of, you know, discretion and not being, you know, having an identity that's safe at Kinky Salon. So there's no pictures, you know, you're not allowed to blog about what you see people doing there. If you do, you have to be making sure that no one can be recognized. You know, it's very much about, you know, keep making a safe space for people, especially when women, you know, and professionals to be open in one space about, you know, how freaky and connected they can be.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it. Thank you so much.
What did you think of the party? You went to sniff my Edwardian balls, I think was the name of the party.
Yeah, it was. I really liked it. I love the costumes. I wish I had brought an Edwardian costume in my suitcase, but I didn't because I was not prepared.
Yeah, you didn't know.
I really enjoyed it. Everybody was dressed up great and they were huggable and loving and sweet and nice and so welcoming. And I think it has been one of the best parties I've ever been to in my life.
It's interesting. It's a sex party, but there's a lot of talking and making friends and, you know.
It's a sex party, but it's not. I always thought that those sex parties would just be like screwing like rabbits, everybody. It's like, no, it's not all about sex. It's like very sex positive, but very life positive, I think. That's what the feeling I got.
Yeah. Well, and it's nice to be in an environment where sex is a possibility and people are very sexually open and free and you could make out with someone if you feel like it. But it's certainly not mandatory.
Yeah.
But it's nice to be in the energy. Like, how does it feel different to be in a sex positive environment?
As compared to
like a regular party where you couldn't have sex. There's no bowls of condoms. There's not people making out in the other room.
I think I'm a very sex positive person myself, although I had never really used that word because it's not really used in Holland because I think more people, are just sex positive. I don't know. But what I liked is that it's just so safe and clean and open and possible and, I mean, better than just at a normal party, you have to sneak into the bathroom and be like, if you want some. And then, that's a lot more uncomfortable. And Kinky Salons was very comfortable.
Right. Well, And sneaking into, I mean, I love the idea that, you know, sex is okay. And that if you, you know, it's an option if you want it. And that's something that I want to talk about. Alice in Bondage Land's work, the way that she kind of bridges that gap to make porn that's sexy and sex positive and looks like sex that, you know, people might actually want to have, is she uses real people in the porn. Because, I mean, I think you can see some porn, and how does that porn look usually?
Not very fun.
Right? It looks kind of like the woman has really long fingernails, and they're both kind of looking like they're pretending to enjoy it, and they're making unrealistic noises, but so they're like having like theater sex, you know. They're
but
not
Monica. That's what I like.
You like that?
Yeah.
For realsies?
Oh yeah, I love watching this. It's great.
I smell sarcasm. Actually,
you do.
I do smell this.
Oh, because maybe because I'm the token straight guy.
What if there's just not really many choices out there that are like real people having real people sex? You know, the blonde and the dyed and the plastic and the enhanced and the, you don't get to watch real people have real people sex very often.
No, not everyone gets to live in San Francisco where there are parties where you can witness other couples. Porn tries to sell us a view of sexuality that really isn't even accurate for the people that are making the porn videos.
Can you say more about that?
some people kind of become a caricature of themselves.
Right.
But other people are asked to fulfill a specific script and a set of roles that are assigned to them, where they'll arrive on set, an outfit will be given to them, a partner will be assigned to them. And they have very little say about the kinds of things they actually enjoy doing. And right. I've found that...
Like they're not even being themselves on camera a little bit.
Well, they're playing to a shot list.
Right.
And what I've found is if you give performers an opportunity to talk about what they actually like, that, well, for one thing, sometimes they'll like things that I would never in a million years ask them to do.
That sounds kind of fun.
apply stinging nettles to certain naughty locations.
Really?
I asked somebody what he really, really wanted to do, and he confessed that he had been growing his own. And once a year would have a big party with them, but he'd never filmed it. So in some cases, I get outrageous responses when I ask people, no, really, what are your fantasies? I don't have a script. Let's make it about you and what you really, really like to do or really want to show people that you can do. Or right. Some people are looking for an opportunity to show off little human tricks.
Right.
But other people are looking for an experience that can't be had in real life, that can be done safely with a crew and spotters and people with STD tests.
Spotters.
Spotters as in people to help get you in and out of bondage. Extreme things that would take a whole crew to put together, even though all you have is one really shy lover that does things because he wants to make you happy. there are things you can accomplish with a whole team that are inaccessible otherwise in terms of bondage predicaments and different scenarios. And
really?
Sometimes the mind takes
boggles.
A team.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of the thing with threesomes. You know, if you have an extra set of hands, you can accomplish some stimulation that isn't possible with just two people.
Exactly. So I like to give people an opportunity. Instead of going out and hiring a woman who has the look but doesn't necessarily... I don't mind if they have the looks, but I also don't mind if they don't, as long as they have the passion. That's the part that you can't dress up or put makeup on. You either really like it or you don't, and you're trying to just get through it. So rather than have an hour of someone just trying to get through this list of things I'm asking them to do, I would much rather shoot 15 minutes of, oh my God, there's this thing I really love. Can I show you? Because that creates the kind of movie where you watch the movie and you go, oh, wow, that looks like fun. Why, honey, can we try this? Instead of it being, oh, my God, why would people ever do that? That looks horrible. They look like they're in pain. You know, and it doesn't look like anything you can relate to. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that that actually translates? Do you think that people, as they're watching, really can tell the difference between someone who's like, oh, my God, this is so totally my thing, and then someone who's doing it just theatrically?
I think there are some people out there that are extraordinary performers that can sell just about anything as, oh, yeah, I really like this. Mm. But I've found as a consumer of porn over the years that there are some women that really like it and there are some women that really don't. And there are some companies that are better about creating those really special circumstances where it can be really hot and also really authentic for whoever's doing it.
Now, from a guy's point of view, I can actually tell.
Yeah, you can tell.
More often than not, yeah.
What are the tells that give it away for you?
The eyes.
Good question.
The eyes, really, yeah. I see, you know, there's the pupils. I really zero in on the eyes, the pupils.
Because if your pupils are not dilated, you're not that into it.
Exactly.
Gotcha. One of the tells for me is the if there's any wetness sexually or if their pussy lips are flushed. I look
engorgement.
For the engorgement, that beautiful way it changes shape and things. Mm-hmm. So certain things kind of break the fourth wall if you're trying to get off to something and then you notice that something is kind of amiss with the performers. Mm-hmm. And I like that you bring up the eyes, and we're over here making this great eye contact as we talk about it.
Yes.
But that's something that's also really missing in a lot of porn is a sense of connection. Both between the couples or the group and that sort of thing, but also the women being connected with whatever it is they're doing, not just who they're doing it to, but what they're doing. I see a lot of checking out. So I'd much rather ask them, what do you really like to do? What do you feel like doing today? And play to their strengths instead of playing to kind of a trope or a to-do list.
Well, I think something that's really sad that I have imagined happening in the porn industry is that people are being pushed to do things that they don't really like doing, and that they might use drugs or alcohol to numb a little bit to things that maybe they're not that into, or that they've had so much sexual stimulation and maybe they need the money or whatever, that they, you know, start not connecting to sexuality as pleasure anymore, but kind of only connecting to it as work. And that's when you start seeing, you know, the glazed over eyes. And that's the part that I'm worried about. Like, I'm worried about that star. I'm worried about that woman. I'm worried about that man, whoever it is, doing something that they don't want to do. Like, if someone's doing this from a place of full empowerment and consent, then I'm really celebrating their ability to actualize this amazing fantasy. If they're being coerced into doing it just from the needing the money, then it's like, oh, you know?
Well, the money and power issues behind right. it get complicated, especially exactly. as we go into a recession where there's a lot of studios that are kind of fighting each other for the who can be the most extreme kind of games, where, you know, people have to chase that 10% of profit margin with bigger boobs or younger girls, or, you know, they're chasing a line of extremeness that doesn't really turn me on. So I sold a lot of my belongings and started making the kinds of videos that I wanted to see. But that's kind of turned into a philosophy of, I want people to come and make the kind of videos that they want to be in, but also the kind of videos that they want to watch. Because many, many women will look at porn and want to enjoy it, but be unable to connect with anything that they see.
Boy, isn't that the truth. I was watching some porn recently. Someone put on the FetLife female ejaculation group this little clip about a woman squirting creamy, which usually it's clear. So I was like, oh, really creamy? And, you know, clickety click, click, click. And you can see that it's a vagina, but you can't even, it's so close. So you don't see people or faces or anyone. And you can't really even tell what's happening to the vagina. And suddenly, you know, she's ejaculating. And, well, I assume that it's a girl, but I only can see just the genitals. But so, and you know what I mean? It's just so impersonal. And then I finally realize, oh, that's a woman going down on her. And then it like cuts to something else is happening. And I still can't tell what it is. And then I'm like, oh, okay, she's ejaculating. And, oh, I guess that's a penis. And which it was so confusing because there was just no, and it actually kind of made me a little squicked out. Like I was a little bit grossed out just because it was so dehumanized.
Now,
you know,
Monica,
I mean?
Are you watching that porn right now? Because you keep looking at your screen.
I am posting to the FCC Free Radio website to encourage people to listen to their live stream. And so, forgive me for, yeah, I'm not surfing porn over here. I'm actually tweeting and I'm using public platforms to encourage people to listen to the radio show.
Very good.
But yeah, so as we're watching porn, I just feel like, you know, sometimes I really want to know that this feels good. And I mean, that's kind of how I get into it. Otherwise, it kind of seems, I don't know, intense and messy. Like, it seemed really messy.
Good sex like, is often messy.
I know, and I feel that too. But if I'm not turned on, then I get squicked out.
It's just a little too graphic.
It totally was. Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
I was definitely not involved in, like, because I know that we have these mirror neurons that mm-hmm. we start to feel what the people that we're watching feel. Mm-hmm. But instead of feeling turned on, I don't know. I guess I was feeling what I would be like to clean it up, or, you know, wondering why it was white. And then I was kind of trying to analyze it from my sex geeky kind of way. Like, mm-hmm. what's going on there? And, you know, there hasn't been really enough research into female ejaculation. So in any case,
we can do some hands-on research.
Amen.
I like to see that.
Right. AliceInBondageLand.com.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Okay, so let's do a little bit of musical chairs here in the studio. Rukama, would you like to trade with Arabelle Raphael?
I will.
And
thank you very
much. Thanks so much for being on the show. Please stay in the studio and listen in. And of course, we will be posting the video that we're making tonight to sexplorationwithmonica.com and also your other website. Did you
also to AliceInBondageLand.com as well?
All right, cool. For free. Yay! And so, Arabelle,
Hello. Welcome. I lost my voice, so if I sound really funny, that's why.
No worries. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you've done a little bit of alternative porn here in San Francisco yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what kind of porn do you prefer doing? Do you like doing the big money porn, or would you prefer to work in alt porn?
I don't know if I have a preference. It's a very, very different experience. When I like shoot out in San Francisco, I do queer porn.
Only queer porn? Well,
basically, I've done some bondage out here, but mostly queer porn. I go to LA, and it's very different. I've only done basically like straight porn when I go to Los Angeles, and it's been a totally different scene. So it's fun out here because I identify as queer, and so I get to have sex with like not only that but like my partners and have the kind of sex that I have like in my personal life.
You actually like?
Yeah, no, and you know what, the porn I do in LA I still love.
I still enjoy it
and I still like doing it. It's just very different. I definitely like approach it like with a very different mindset, and it's a totally different experience. And out here it's very like I feel like it's kind of like I get to play with friends.
Because you really do get to play.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, like I've banged my roommate, like for porn out here. I've done stuff with my partner. I've done stuff with like a good amount of my friends, and it's just kind of it's fun. It's just a totally different vibe. I don't know how to change it. I feel definitely a little bit less professional.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's because it's so comfortable. Like the people that are shooting at me are also my friends. Like it's just it's different. It's a different audience. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
The two titles that we talked about were, I love them, Occupy My Ass.
Yes.
And Asphyxia Heals the World, H-E-E-L-S. Mm-hmm. Now tell us about the two production companies that you work
with. Those two are our mainstream porn companies in
Evil Angel and Burning Angel.
And Burning Angel, yes. They're both mainstreams. Actually, there is another alternative porn that just came out, Courtney Treble's Fuck Styles. Actually, Courtney Treble and Tina Horn for Queer Porn TV. They just came out with something too recently that was like alternative. But yeah, those two other titles are mainstream porn.
So, okay.
It's fun though. Like Burning Angel, it's specifically tattooed and pierced women, which we don't really like.
You don't see a lot of that.
It's really, really hard in the porn industry as a tattooed girl. I mean, I even have more. I'm curvier, I am not white, and I'm tattooed. So I have to work a lot harder.
Yeah. But in what way? Like, how do you have to work harder, and how do you have to put yourself out there more to get work?
Because I'm not like the stereotypical like mainstream porn girl. And a lot of directors, I don't think, want to take the chance. On somebody, they don't know if it's gonna sell, so they're too afraid of doing that. And so, honestly, I straighten my hair. Like when I go do like mainstream, I go straighten my hair. Like definitely like have seen in photos that I like look a little like.
Assimilation is one of the things that we push in this culture.
Like I don't have my like all my piercings in right now, but like those are taken out, and like I choose to do that, and I am comfortable with that. I wish that was a different, I wouldn't have to, but
I don't look queer. What I mean? I don't look like I'm polysexual or whatever. And so I understand where you're coming from. I wish I could identify more with the queer community, but most people just don't see me as queer. Kind of like, well, I guess I get the privilege of that.
Of passing. At the same time, it's not a home. It's very weird. And especially as a femme, even in like just in queer culture, even as a femme, like that's even more.
Yeah.
Like you're pretty much invisible.
Right. Which is helpful sometimes.
Yeah, it can be, there's privilege that comes with that.
Right.
But then you're definitely, like, more shunned in your own community.
Well, you wish you could express all the freaky deakiness that is actually a part of your authentic being.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wish I could wear my rainbow bright strap on out in the world, right? But I can't.
You can come do that in my world. I built it.
I love your world. That's why, that's why we love all of the things about San Francisco alternative culture and community. You know, we can go to Kinky Salon and have our rainbow bright strap on, and wear the weird clothes,
and Wicked Grounds,
which
is back in operation, and now opening at 3 p.m.
Oh, really?
So they're
later hours. Good. 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 Because I'm sure the kinky people don't go to Wicked Grounds at 8 in the morning anyway.
Very few of us.
Right. And then they don't have to wake up early themselves. I'm sure it's a much better business model. So let's talk a little bit more about countering sex negativity and stigma. Do you think that the work that you do, or the work, I guess, with SWAP, that's definitely countering.
I worked as an escort for a really long time. I've done a bunch of different kinds of sex work. I think I've done everything but phone sex and pro subbing, period. Like
pro subbing, yeah. Right. So that's when you're a submissive.
Yeah, a professional. Yeah, a professional submissive. I think. That I know of, I bet there's a lot more out there.
There's probably
that I'm
a lot of
unaware,
that a
but
person
I've done,
could do, but you've
I've done
a lot
quite
of
a bit.
Stuff. Okay, so you've done porn, you've done escorting,
I've stripped,
pro-doming,
cam girl, like I cammed at Kink,
right?
For a while, so I've definitely like tried it out, and it's I mean, there's still like even in San Francisco, which is kind of like the mecca of like sex positivity in the United States.
Sure.
There's still a lot of stigma. People are really still pretty weirded out by it. And even like, let's say like the kink community, I'm kinky. I've noticed that like, you can't be like kinky and queer, or you can't be like,
intersecting identities.
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely noticed that. Like
you have to choose one.
Yeah, exactly.
At a time.
Exactly. And like, oh, that's a little too much. It's very strange.
Yeah, it's really weird, isn't it? But how do you deal with that? Like, how do you start to counter that? And can you?
I think we can. I feel like visibility is a huge,
really helpful
thing. Like, I've never been very quiet about what I've done and like what I do. No matter, like, it can be uncomfortable, and it, you know, I've gotten a lot of like bad reactions too. But I feel like the more of us who are honest about what we do and fight for it. Like, but I don't know. I feel like. I understand like being anonymous. At the same time, I feel like
it
really
does.
Exactly. And there's a reason for it.
You know, maybe if you have kids and you're afraid of a custody battle, it makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
So it's hard to judge.
No, and there's no judgment. I totally understand. But the more of us that can.
I know. It's so helpful.
Because
if you're silent, then you're invisible.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The more of us that are able to do that, like, the better. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's like the biggest thing.
Right.
Visibility. Yeah, I don't know.
So the Sex Worker Outreach Project, I know that you guys do outreach. So you do like maybe harm reduction stuff and passing out condoms, talking about how to practice safer sex.
Yeah, I mean, it's an organization like run. I just joined like a month.
It's actually a pretty new organization.
So they've been around for a little bit, but the SF chapter had been running for a while.
Okay.
Basically we do that kind of stuff. It's all like run by like people who either are sex workers or have been sex workers.
It's peer run.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I think that
helps
is actually
the judgment thing.
Oh yeah. And I feel
no
like
one's
it's
being
a lot
like,
more
you should
comfortable.
Be like this. Right.
I honestly like I do have a hard time as a sex worker hearing people who don't have the experience.
Right.
Like tell me I love allies, and allies are needed. But like for that kind of program, I feel like it's very important to have people who do the work or have done the work,
right.
You know, from like a firsthand experience. Also, I wasn't around for this, but like when Prop K came around, they fought really hard for that. Yeah.
Legalization of prostitution here in San Francisco.
They fought very hard for that.
Which didn't pass,
they did
unfortunately.
Not pass, no.
I mean, it was so close too. And so many people were like, the people who were in the police department were for it, you know?
And a lot of people who are part of like sex positivity communities would not actually get behind that, which was very interesting because they were afraid of getting their funding cut. I'm not going to go say who, but quite a few organizations did that because they were afraid of what would happen if they supported the legalization.
Well, and also I think when you legalize sex work, it does become more, it could become cheaper because you're not paying for the risk.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. There would be a lot of change. Honestly, I would be a lot more comfortable like decriminalizing than like complete legalization. Mm. I don't really like what Nevada has done. Like, I don't like the way
bunny
those places,
ranches with bars that you can't leave unless you have an escort. Oh, and they take owned by they men
take,
and you
they
have
take half of your income. Profits. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I just
and you
I
have to show up when the bell rings. I mean, they have like this crazy system where. Have you ever seen any of the bunny ranch? Okay, so the prostitution in Nevada is really creepy. Have you seen?
And tightly controlled. Yeah, well, mm-hmm. it's the logical extension of capitalism combined with prostitution.
Definitely.
You know, what happens when corporations get into prostitution? They're slightly better than the mafia, but in Nevada, that line is very blurry, especially out on the ranches where they control your whole world.
Yeah, and ranches is kind of an interesting word for it because you have this idea of livestock and slaughter.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Yes. Exactly.
The prostitution ghettos might be another word for it, right. but they really are treated as livestock, temporarily mm-hmm. at least. Mm-hmm. But for that time, you are selling your body, your time, and your full existence for that amount mm-hmm. of time.
And they literally won't let women leave the ranch on their own. You have to have someone come pick you up.
I've definitely like met women who have gone and like worked there for a little bit and mm-hmm. left because they, you know, had a specific amount of time and enjoyed it. But that was because it was like an experience.
Right.
And like, no, seriously. And they, and you know, this wasn't the way they did their business most of the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, but there are people, you know, they don't, it's not just like an experience, not just a visit. Like, it's like that all the time. And it's
if they are unable to work illegally, you know, they just need the support of, you know, this is legal. This is the way I want to pay for my kids' college. You know, you have to have that subsidization by the government.
Yeah. You can't be an independent escort in Nevada. You have to work for a house. So.
And they're all owned by men.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've heard so far. and it's interesting the way that people are treated, too, because it's very strict on the amount of time that you're working. You know, there really are like they ring the bell and everyone has to come out. I mean, it's quite dehumanizing, in my opinion. It's worth researching because I think that when you have people in control of the way that they do porn, if you have people in control of the way they do sex work, choosing their own partners, their own outfits, their own scripts, their own people that they're having sex with, how they negotiate, I think it's so much juicier and better and sexier. And like, wouldn't you want someone that wants to have sex with you if you were seeing a sex worker? And, you know, wouldn't you like to watch someone that was, you know, having sex that they like to have?
That's what I like to believe. My guiding philosophy with videos is that if I want someone watching it at home to enjoy it, it has to be at least as hot for me and for the people in the frame as we want it to be for the people watching at home and identifying with it.
Well, the same is true for just about any industry. I mean, comedy, it's like
that's
that.
True.
Theater is like that. Customer service is like that. You know, you want someone that really enjoys what they're doing.
Because then they do a good job.
Exactly.
They want to be on stage.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm sure a comedian who doesn't want to be on stage would be hard.
And who wants to watch, you know, someone who's just going through the motions, you know, like bad porn.
Well, sex is one of those things that you can just go through the motions on, but an astute and sexually healthy person will pick up on those tells. And I think that the way we envision our sex as a culture has changed really dramatically in the last generation, because now people are learning about sex through porn. You know, porn is readily available.
I have a weird, like, argument with that whole thing.
Yeah.
I feel... No, because I totally agree with you. At the same time, like, porn's fantasy. And I think the problem is not necessarily, like, the way porn... It can be fantasy. It doesn't have to be. There's different types of porn. But, I mean, you are creating... There's certain types where you are creating a fantasy. And I feel like the problem is actually that people that are taking that to heart and not, like, being able to... To decipher,
people who
like,
can't differentiate between this is a fantasy.
Yeah, exactly.
People don't actually like to be non-consensually brutalized.
Exactly.
Like she actually consented and she said
she signed
this
forms and said that it was okay. She had a no list. Like, and
let's talk about what a no list is, just for people listening who doesn't know what that is.
It's basically just like you'll get a list of like different activities or like people or whatever.
You don't want to have sex with a particular person, or this is okay, but this isn't okay.
Yeah, totally.
Like this person can do me anally, but this person can't.
Yeah. So there, that's a no list. So, you know, right. You check that off and you
let and everyone know. Gets a copy of the no list.
Yes.
I love that. Yes. I love that there's a little bit of bureaucracy, even with.
It's nice. Know. And like most of like, at least in mainstream, like I've usually haven't met like the person that I'm going to perform with.
Oh,
until
so
I
this
get
would
on
be
stage.
The, hi, but how are I've you? Let's have
really,
sex.
I've had a very, I feel like I've had a really great experiences and other people definitely I've heard horror stories, but from my own, like I've had great performers that like been like, okay, like do you like this, do you not like this, for like Occupy My Ass, like it was like
it, I love that name. It's so great. Occupy My Ass.
You know, like I was being topped by Aiden Starr and Mr. Pete, and like when I was like before we shot, like Aiden, who was like doming me, like, you know, it was just like, you know, what do you like, what do you not like, like what's a hard no, and it was very quick and simple, but I felt like incredibly like safe with her. It was really nice, and I know that that's not always the case, but I feel like I've been pretty blessed. I'm also like have gotten to work with some like really awesome people. So
here in the San Francisco area,
I'm talking about the LA both experience, in but LA in SF too. I mean, I'm most of the people that I've worked out in San Francisco like have been my friends, like
right.
Really
so
nice.
Let's talk a little bit about the communities that we're creating, because you actually were referred to me by the creator of Kinky Salon, Scott, all of the different sex positive groups that kind of come together here in the Bay Area. What do you find is most, I mean, because there's so many, I mean, there's the queer community and the kinky community and the porn community. Do you find that there's a way that, is there some common ground that all sex positive communities stand on? Or is it really like all these different groups? And do you think that there's a way that we could come together more?
Oh, definitely.
What do you think?
I think so. I mean, the common ground that we all stand on is like most people think we're freaks. You know?
Yep.
And like, I mean, I like the idea of like different kinds of freaks coming together.
Me too,
you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, that I feel like that's the like the biggest, you know, like people judge us for what we like or who we are.
Right.
I feel like a lot of the problems that why we stay separated is definitely like it's politics.
Well, and I think it's the same sorts of judgments that are in the popular culture that we're fighting against for ourselves. And then we have like some kind of, oh, well, you know, I may be a lesbian, but urethral sounding, that is just unnatural or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, so we have, because our culture is sex negative, you know, we sort of privilege, you know, what we're doing, or mm-hmm. we privilege, you know, something unconsciously. And so I think it's really important, especially as people in the sex positive community, to really start to examine, you know, what do we believe? Am I able to like, oh, really respect that you want to put something in your urethra? Whatever it is. And I hear it feels really good. I don't know, because I've never tried it. But urethra, do you guys know what urethral sounding is? You do.
Oh, yes.
Do you know what urethral sounding is? Rukama doesn't. Okay. So I get to explain it. Yay.
looking for an excuse.
I know. I love explaining. Because like, it's one of those things that is like so fascinating to me. It's like food in a foreign country. You're like, how could this taste good to anyone? It's cold sea cucumber. Whoa, it's crunchy. It tastes like the ocean. Weird. So urethral sounding is when you put an object, any object, usually it's a stainless steel dowel that's tapered at the end. That's the maximum comfort. But I have heard people do it with an ordinary ballpoint pen.
Sharpies are a little easier because they're smooth.
Right. So you want something smooth. That's nice, because you're putting something inside of your urethra, and this can be with, you know, women or men. And the sound is like, you know, you sound the ocean to see how deep it is. So you're like putting something in your urethra to go as deeply as you can and maybe reach the bladder. And apparently this journey, the tissue inside the urethra feels like G-spot stimulation.
Coming in reverse is how I've heard it from some men also.
Coming in reverse.
That it's the same sensation that you get through ejaculation, but in reverse.
Okay, so instead of the spooge coming out, uh-huh. it's something going in.
But lube and a very, very smooth device is really the key for that, because that's some of the most sensitive skin inside your whole body.
Right, I bet. Because it doesn't get a lot of action.
Your kink is okay and their kink is okay.
Totally.
That's the important part is to find that compassion for, I don't know why in the world you would enjoy that, but I see that you enjoy it.
Well, in addition, like everyone has different neurology based on their own experiences. So we actually develop nervous pathways of pleasure and thrill, happy thrill, because of the positive experiences that we've had. Like probably I just don't have any experience of enjoying urethral sounding because I've never tried it. And I could try it, I don't know, or I could leave my urethra alone. But in any case, as long as I'm having sex that I enjoy... And you're having sex that you enjoy.
That's all that matters.
Exactly. And I don't know, I actually have watched porn with urethral sounding. And no, my mirror neurons were like, oh my God. But I'm also glad that someone else really liked it and it was kind of fascinating. And you know what I mean? And they clearly were totally into it because they had a big old boner.
Yep. So the cock barometer.
Exactly. So what are some of the other things that you guys have learned about acceptance, sex positivity while working in porn, working in any kind of sex positive environment, working at SWAP?
I don't know. Like for me, you know, I started doing sex work, I think, when I was like 19, so pretty young. And like there was a lot of things like I had never experienced. Like the first time I ever fisted anybody like was a photo shoot. And like... I love fisting. Like, it's like one of my favorite things to do. So for me, like sex work, I've learned a lot of things that I actually really enjoy in my personal life. And it's with, had been with professionals and had been in a safe place with, you know, and it was, and like someone taught me and that was really, it was a really interesting way. Like I figured out I was queer actually through porn.
Oh.
which also was really interesting. I was just trying to work.
So you thought that you were heterosexual?
Yeah, well, pretty much. I mean, like, I definitely like vaguely like identified as bisexual, but never really felt like whatever. Like I basically put myself in the like definitely.
Well, because
like, hetero.
That's what we're told as you know, people. We're like, oh, I'm supposed to be this.
Yes. And so I didn't really like. Yeah, I basically just put myself in the like heterosexual
in the box.
Like box. Right. And I was actually, I was just like found a porn site. It was a Crash Pad series. And I was just like, hey, like, that looks like fun. And it had been another performer that had been like, I've seen you in a movie. Like, you're really hot. And he was a trans man. And I'd never been with a trans man before.
Right.
And like, he's like, you know, do you want to do like a scene together? And I was like, okay,
sure.
Like, why not?
And then
like,
it totally lit
like,
your
like,
fire.
Oh, I'm really this into this really kind hot. Of sex. I'm really hot. Like, cool.
Right,
and then I, like, got to, like, figure out a lot of stuff about myself. So it's been really great for
me. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for being on the show. It's been so wonderful. Arabelle Raphael, thank you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica. People can find you Occupy My Ass or Asphyxia Heals the World. Alice of Alice in Bondage Land, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Yum.
And Rushama Vanderhorn of the University of Amsterdam, thank you so much for coming all the way to San Francisco.
Well, thank you.
And Malcolm from The Verve Show.
Sure.
Thanks for listening to Sexploration with Monica.
You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.